Welcome to the Sikkim Sportscast. I'm Steve Cook here with your editor and publisher, Kevin Longquist. And Kevin, Baylor's basketball roster is going to look pretty different next year.
It is. I mean, obviously, you've got two guys that are in the portal, most importantly, L.J. Cryer, who last week we talked about had announced that he would enter the NBA draft but also get an agent. And then he kind of, if you will, doubled his pleasure by entering the portal earlier this week, or will enter the portal. I haven't seen anything official on that yet, but I mean, everything points to that. That's on its way doing. And the fact that he's already had contact with multiple schools, including Kansas State, no surprise, Jerome Tang is there, having contact with Kansas, having contact with Texas, and having contact with his home school, Houston. Those are all not surprises. Illinois is in there too. Indiana, Purdue, those are schools in there. I mean, everyone, he's one of the better, guards out there and one of the better players in the portal that is going to be highly coveted. He's going to have a great market for him. And the way I kind of look at him, there's always the chance he could withdraw and stay at Baylor, but, that doesn't seem likely. But I think the way that you look at this roster now, with the fact that obviously Keontae George is gone, and with LJ pretty much out the door, and then and the fact, we don't know anything about Adam Flagler's status just yet, but you also have the addition of two really great-looking guards in Jacoby Walter and Merrill Litto. Merrill, the one from Finland, he's actually in Kansas right now, but they're coming in this summer. They're going to start when they get here. That's, they didn't come to Baylor so that they would work their way off the bench. I know that Scott Drew has always had this way of developing his players throughout his program and his history, where certain guys have redshirted a year to where they would get better and that sort of thing. And, you can see that a little bit like with Flagler, how he developed. But Scott's recruiting at a different level now. So you look at this where Merrill Litto and Jacoby Walter are going to come in. They're going to start. They didn't come here so that they would be guys that would develop in a situation. Now, Danton Grimes, who's more than likely going to be the point guard this year, he's the one that fits the Drew category of developmental guys. Coming in from a JUCO, like at Kilgore College, had a really good career there. But at the same time, I think he's a guy that will probably start to run this offense next year, provided that everything goes the way they think it's going to. And then once you get that going, it's just going to be, where do the shots come from LJ Cryer? If Flagler decides to return, which I think he will, Adam might announce, who knows when, he might take the same path as Cryer, announced for the NBA draft, kind of see where his stock is, but then eventually return before May 31st, stay on this roster because he's such a great leader for this team in a lot of respects. Now, he's not a great point guard, but that's what Baylor's offense really needs. But if you think about him, and then you think about Langston Love, you think about Walter and Little, then you think about Grimes. Now, Grimes probably won't be a big shooter. He's going to be a facilitator. But if you think about that, again, back to Cryer, where are the shots going to come from? Even though he's a tremendous three-point shooter, where is it going to come? And I think he probably looked at all that and said, there's no way I'm going to have as much opportunity because I might lose my starting job this year in the 23-24 season with what's coming in. And that's probably where this is all going.
Several thoughts on this. First of all, I remember a couple of years ago that Langston Love was going to come in and he was going to play. And he blew his knee out and completely missed the year. So, don't count your chickens, all that kind of good stuff. Number two, Cryer is a known quantity. Drew knows what he can do. In this instance, he is functionally trading a known quantity for what he thinks will be a better quantity. Number three is that I do think that particularly with him looking at declaring for the draft, that we have to consider the possibility that money plays into this, that it may not be just that he hasn't got a place on the Baylor bench. But you have mentioned that Baylor's kind of behind on the NIL game. And, hey, he's basically entering into the NBA draft and entering into free agency with the college.
Yeah. Well, and then the other thing here with this is that, you know, the NIL took care of Keontae George just fine. But I think in Cryer's case, you know, but again, it's not so much the structure of the NIL in a lot of cases, but I mean, it is, you know, because that's probably going to be a part of this where I think Baylor's NIL thing is a complete mess. I'll still go back. I know I'm kind of deviating here, but the thing that just drives me nuts about whole Baylor's approach to NIL was way back in January when they were waiting for the NCAA to issue guidance, official guidance on this, when so many other college athletic programs were way ahead, well down the road with their NILs. And Baylor, I mean, essentially Baylor's like, if they want to say that here's all of our NIL stuff, and what was it, mid to late January, they're 2.5 months behind, or excuse me, they're 2.5 months into this, when other schools are so well out. This thing's been going on, Stephen, for 18 months. We're closing it on 2 years since it became a thing, July 1st of 2021. But, you know, you could probably say those first 4 months were kind of like the feeling out episode. And then I think it really in 2022 is when it took off. But even so, if you allow for, you know, starting the clock on this stuff on January 1st of 2022, if you want to use that date, arbitrarily speaking, still, Baylor was a full year behind this when other schools had theirs in place. Now, to what extent does this impact prior situation? Hard to say. I would suspect that it has something to do with it. But, again, it comes back to who's coming in to handle the ball, who's going to get shots. And I just don't think he's going to get as many of them, even though he's a great three-point shooter. But I just don't think that there's going to be a lot of opportunities for him to score the ball like he did this year that he would next year. And, look, he's got a history of some injuries in front of him, too, because of the fact that, you know, he missed a couple games this year, you know, bumps and, you know, nothing huge. But, of course, last year he had the foot injury where he had the surgery. He got through the year this year fine. But that's a big thing, that does your foot over time, does that catch up with you? But having said that, I mean, that's just the way it works sometimes. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out for Baylor. I mean, I still think a guy like Jordan Turner, pretty much like the same thing as Zach Loveday, who's in the portal. I think Jordan might enter the portal. But again, what are you losing there? Nothing. Not written. I mean, he was a guy that was just end on the bench. You know, for Baylor's roster configuration here, you know, you're going to have Jonathan Chamu-Chachua coming in. You're going to have Olajuwon come, you know, returning as well. I think he'll be better. I actually think he'll be the starter next year, and I think Jonathan will still be coming off the bench because Baylor will need some sort of energy off the bench from the bigs, and hopefully, with what he learned when he returned in mid-February, starting with Tech through the end of the year, when he just kind of, you know, again, did they rush everyday John back? I don't know. Maybe to an extent they did, but having said that, you know, they're going to have some sort of presence underneath in order to be a really balanced team, because that's where they got killed, you know, toward the end of the year.
Yeah, and you know, we picked on Flo Thamba some a little bit, but, you know, the sad truth was he was their best option. All right? So that's where it was with that. Loveday and Turner, you know, their moms probably care that they leave, but I'm not sure anybody else. I would not have known Loveday was leaving if he hadn't made an announcement, because you could play the whole season and not know he exists.
Yeah. I mean, with Turner, no, we're only speculating here about Turner. I mean, there's nothing that would indicate that he would or he wouldn't. And he may just stay there at Baylor and just return and kind of enjoy his scholarship. And if the program likes him as just a part of it, even though it doesn't do anything, for the most part, that's fine.
Yeah. So let's take a look at Baylor football. And Matt Pallage came out yesterday and said that they're looking at going more to press coverage. What can you tell me about that?
Well, I mean, if press coverage, I mean, that means that you better have some corners that you feel that can handle one-on-one coverage and that you don't need safety over-the-top help as much. So whether that means it's going to be Isaiah Dunson back there, A.J. McCarty back there, Tevin Williams back there, who are going to be able to handle one-on-one situations with wide receivers, you know, we'll see. Now Matt's got the safeties as well as being the defensive coordinator here, so I think how he manages to craft that side of the defense, that part of the defense, the back end of it, will be important because, you know, your safety play, you know, they're kind of like that last line of defense over your corners if your corners get burned or something like that. And so your safeties are going to have to be really efficient, really fast, of course, and very physical. And I think it's going to be interesting to see what Matthew does with it. I know that Devin Lemire's had a great camp, and he's opening some eyes. You know, he made a great run toward the end of last year. He pretty much took the job away from Devin Neal last year, where, you know, Devin wound up going back to the state of Kentucky to Louisville. And I think from what Matthew wants to do is I think he wants to instill that mentality with his corners of saying, I've got to have a short-term memory because you're going to get beat. That's corners are going to get beat. It just happens. But what you've got to do is you've got to play with an edge. You've got to play with a mindset that you can take, that you can handle any cover in the game, whether it's going to be going against a guy who's just a slot receiver who has track speed, or to face a guy who is just, you know, tall, physical, and will probably beat you for 50-50 balls unless you find a way to outjump him based on what you study on film and that sort of thing. So I think he wants to create that culture with his corners that they will be able to handle playing any type of receiver. And so if you're going to start the building blocks, spring ball is the time to do it.
Now, one of the things when we talk about this type of situation with these corners is that we're almost in a situation like we were a few years ago where, you know, we're sitting there and we didn't know any of those guys coming in. We haven't, you know, we don't get to see anything but warm-up drills, you know, until they actually hit the field. We'll see a little during the spring game. But I don't know any of these guys, all right? And so are they, number one, are they good enough? Are they tall enough? Are they fast enough? And do they have the mental makeup to do that? It's going to be a while before we know that. Do you have any kind of read on it?
Well, I think with Tevin Williams, I think he showed, now, again, it was Air Force in the Armed Forces Bowl, and so that's an option attack. But I thought Tevin, you know, for what he could do, I thought he was okay. A.J. McCarty is the one who really got burned on the big pass play that Air Force used to set up one of its scores. But A.J. is going to be back there, and he has to kind of just look. It's a growth process for him, and I think it's going to be incumbent upon him to really be able to take the next step. A guy like Isaiah Dunson at Miami, highly recruited, coming out of high school down there in South Florida. I think there were high expectations when he got there a couple of years ago so that he could be a major part of the Hurricanes secondary, and that just never happened. He got, I think his total number of tackles between assists and solos in his time at Miami was like 6 total. And so, you know, it's a case where, and of course, now last year, that was Mario Cristobal's first year there at Miami. So there was a lot of changeover in that Miami roster after this past season. I mean, a ton of guys left that program. And so it's, and whether that's a good or bad thing, you know, that's always kind of like coaches, you know, filtering out the roster for guys who they want to fit their style of play, you know, that sort of thing. But with Dunson, I mean, I kind of think that the expectations are that if he's coming here, he's not coming here to sit and to be on the depth chart, you know, as the number 2 guy. He's expected to be likely one of the starting corners once that season starts for Labor Day weekend.
And what you mentioned about with the Air Force game, playing Air Force or playing a team that runs, which I've always thought was kind of weird that Air Force runs primarily a ground game, but I mean, you'd think they'd want to have an air it out guy. You'd think they'd want to run a leech offense. Hey, you're the Air Force, all right? But anyway, that when you're playing a team like that, it's kind of like playing outfield when you're playing against a team that wants to hit a lot of grounders. That the big trick is not losing your concentration more than the skill. Because that pass, I mean, that was like quack, 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 quack. They just lulled them into, you know, they just kind of phased out. And that's what happened on that. Not going to see a ton of that in the Big 12, maybe against K-State.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the way as a corner, if you're playing a team like Air Force or Army or something like that, is you have to, what it teaches you as a corner is that you've got to be a really physically and fundamentally sound tackler, because they break off a big run, you know, they get through because the option, you know, the dive or whatever gets through, then you're the last guy that has to make the stop.
Yeah, you're basically a deep linebacker.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to put that. And so you just have to learn how to be fundamentally sound in terms of, you know, just taking guys to the ground, and that'll help them just on the way when it comes to in pass coverage, because let's just say they get guy has a half step on him, makes a catch over the shoulder. Well, you got to bring him down. You can't just like use his shoulder to bring him down. You just have to learn how to play the position at all, whether it's ball skills, turning your hips, looking into the receiver's eyes when his eyes widen up to when he thinks the ball is coming right at him, that he's about to make the catch, all those things. But you've got to be able to tackle. And I've seen too many times over the years where corners like to do the shoulder shimmies, and that doesn't get you anywhere, except if you bring the guy down, you've probably knocked him forward for about another 3 or 4 yards, and that doesn't help anybody.
Big thing that I'm curious about this year is that year before last, Baylor was one of the most mentally tough teams in all of college football. Last year, they were not, and I think that, yes, you got to have the talent, you got to have the schemes, you got to play right and everything like that, but this team has to be mentally tough. Last year's team was not mentally tough, and how are they going to address that?
Well, I think the mentally tough part will count. All you need to do in the mentally tough part is see how the TCU game got away from them and how basically the Texas game got away from them. And sometimes, I mean, we can talk about the Texas game where Texas just got more physical and knocked Baylor off the ball, which they did. But remember, Baylor was right in this game. They had the lead at the half. And so, mm-hmm. You know, it's just a matter of, you know, when a bad thing happened to Baylor last year, it was the here we go again. And I've seen the formulaic comments. I see it doesn't matter if I was covering high school athletics or college or the pros. When a team was coming off a difficult year or whatever, and I think there's some truth to it, but it's also kind of formulaic too, where they say, yeah, well, we weren't as close as we were last year. Well, I said, well, funny how winning kind of brings everybody closer together. And losing, everyone kind of gets, you know, snarly face with each other a little bit. I'm like, that kind of happens. Mm-hmm. And so it's Baylor went from one of the biggest cultures. And again, it doesn't matter if you're Baylor or if you're Alabama or Georgia or Ohio State, that you are always going to face adversity. And as what anyone has ever said, it's not what happens when adversity hits. It's how you respond to it. And I don't think Baylor responded to it very well. Again, I'm going to go back to the Oklahoma State game where, you know, they just got drilled in that one. And then they had the bye before they went to West Virginia. And I've talked about this before, where Dave Aranda's presser the Saturday of the bye before West Virginia, how he talked about things were not right where they needed to be. I was a little bit shocked how he talked about that, I'll be honest with you. And I just don't think they ever got it back. And I'll never forget tweeting into the game at West Virginia when they were about I thought they were about to get on top of this game and run away with it. And then you get the goofy shape and fumble that's returned for the touchdown. And you go, from potentially looking at 24-7 to 17-14, and you got a ball game. Because, yeah, and that's kind of what, I think that's probably the game where everything started to snowball even more after Oklahoma State. And so the thing about this team this year is, again, the expectations won't be very high. So I think that's a good thing for them. Again, when you see preseason publications come out in the summer, May, June, whatever, your publication of choice, you're likely going to see Baylor picked, oh, Stephen, if they're picked higher than sixth in any conference preseason magazine, you know, rate, you know, prognostications or whatever, I'd be shocked about that just because of the turnover and what they lost and what they have coming back and so many unknowns about this team. And again, they don't have an established wide receiver. They don't really have a number one running back. And, you know, the quarterback race is up for grabs between Blake Chapin and Sawyer Robertson. You think about all those questions with this team, and that's why they're going to be picked more than likely anywhere between 7 and 9. I don't think they're going to be picked last, but I think they're going to be picked in that area. But I think that's okay for Baylor, because Baylor teams typically like to play when they're kind of under the radar, and then they come up on surprise people. I think what this program has to understand, though, with Aranda and coaches after Aranda, is if you want to have this program play at the top five level that Mac Rhodes said it could be when he gave Matt Rhule that contract extension several years ago, then you have to learn to play to those expectations and play with the mentality of that. And that's very hard to do. It's easier said than done because of what Nick Saban has done at Alabama, what Kirby Smart's doing at Georgia, and, you know, what Ryan Day has done or continued at Ohio State. That's not easy. That's really not easy. Even though those are blue blood programs, I think you could put Georgia in that realm. We'll get pretty close to putting them in there. But that said, it's really hard to put that and keep that level of exceptional football both off and on the field, keep that going with as players rotate in and out of a program. And so that's one thing. That Baylor, if it really believes that it can be a top five program, it has to solve that riddle.
You can't keep being the scrappy underdog. You know, Georgia absolutely knows they're going to be the biggest game on every team's schedule. They know that.
Right.
And until you know, as long as you're playing as the scrappy underdog, if you're playing as a scrappy underdog, you ain't a top five team. All right?
No, you're not. You can't. No, it's absolutely different. I mean, that's where, and I think that's why, you know, we've talked about this before. I think this year for Baylor is, it's very pivotal for them in terms of in the Aranda era. Whatever happens this year, I think will set the tone for how his tenure is going to go, the balance of it.
Yeah, because right now he doesn't have, and it's a big year for Mac Rhodes too, because right now, you know, with what's going on in baseball, women's basketball, and you know, I mean, Baylor's gone out in the field of 32 the last 2 years in men's basketball. Rhodes, there, yeah, hey, you know what? The facilities are cool, but guess what people want to see? They want to see wins. All right? Hey, any last thoughts and close it out for us?
So we'll have, you know, just keep monitoring the list. It's going to be pretty quiet this week just because of the Easter weekend coming up. So there won't be a scrimmage this week. They'll have more visitors coming in next week. They'll have their second scrimmage on April 15th, so that's a week from Saturday. We'll have a couple of reaction from players who were at Baylor's scrimmage this past Saturday. Some pretty good stuff there. Nate Roberts, the brother of Baylor tight end Jake Roberts, was there on Tuesday. Talked to him, had some really good thoughts on him that we'll share with you. And then we'll just kind of keep going down the road, and we'll monitor the transfer portal to see what's going on there from both Baylor potentially losing other players besides Zach Loveday and LJ Cryer to adding a couple of guys to see if that makes a difference there. And we will talk to you all next week on the Sick of Sportscast, and have a great Easter.